Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 2:32 p.m. the Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 12th. We've had a couple of really rather significant moves here today, but I think one of the most important is the run-up we're seeing in agricultural commodities. The price on soybeans has now pushed through 1,400 cents, and this is a clear base formation completion. I think we really do need to look at it with more back history. And if we look all the way out to more than 20 years of history, then what we can see is that the price is above the long-term base, but coming off of depressed levels from over the last 20 years. And this is one of the big factors, that it's not just soybeans, but we're also starting to see that wheat is also completing its base formation. And this is very meaningful, because these are not just commodities for trading. They're also significant food commodities. I'm not entirely sure why the wheat price, or why it's not working for me. But the reality here is that as we look at the kind of pattern that we have on wheat, it's got this beautiful rounding characteristic consistent with accumulation. And the move above 600 cents completed the base. Then it pulled back to the region of the trend mean and rebounded in emphatic fashion, and it was up rather impressively in here today. So this is clear evidence that we've got some definite supply shortages coming through, and it's exactly the same for corn. Corn prices have also completed their base formation. Now, the one thing that contributes to social distress more than any other single factor is high food prices. In an environment where there are a large number of people who are still unemployed, and where a significant number of people in a large number of countries are having difficulty buying food, well, that sows seeds for social unrest and distress. So it is definitely something that we need to pay attention to. Of course, what it's also going to do is create demand for fertilizers. And Mosaic has popped on the upside in here today. Nutrien, which is the merged company of Agrium and Potash Corp Saskatchewan, has continued to push on here, and it was in additional new recovery high at new recovery highs in here today. When we then think about the continuous commodity index, well, it's also doing rather well, and it extended its breakout above 450 in here today. When we think about the LME Metals Index, it has also pushed on to new recovery highs yesterday. Two days ago, was in negative territory yesterday. It was probably in positive territory today. But it's also been ranging below that 3,500 point level for a rather significant period. And I'm not sure why Bloomberg has taken the dates off of the bottom of the chart. There we are. So it's been ranging below 3,500 since 2012. If it pushes above this level, well, then we can conclude we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. And, of course, the mining shares are also responding. So we've had a very clear breakout above the 20,000 level for the FTSE 350 mining index. This is the hallmark of a new bull market. It's being led higher by the industrial metal producers, particularly the iron ore producers. Rio Tinto is right in the region of its all-time peaks. And while it was in negative territory today, and it is a little overbought in the short term, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we get consolidation in the region of an all-time peak, but this looks like a new bull market. And then we can think about oil prices. Oil was up an additional dollar in here today. We had news the other day that Iraq is raising prices for Asian customers, and this continues to look like a recovery overall. We've had a significant rationalization, which is ongoing in the shale sector in the USA. And that rationalization will help to contain the cost of production. But they're not going to go out and borrow the kind of money required to boost drilling in a big way until they see prices sustainably above the $60 handle. But once that happens, then there will be additional supply coming into the market. What we're seeing here is the clear potential that oil prices could be ranging for the foreseeable future. And I think this is one of the most important factors, because classically we would anticipate that oil prices should be leading other commodities higher because of the input costs of producing other commodities are heavily dependent upon the price of oil. But that's less the case in here today, because what in fact we've seen with agriculturals has been a supply disruption that on the one hand there has been difficulty in sowing and in harvesting crops because of the pandemic. When we look at what's going on in China, there's a big dependence from northern China on fruits and veg that are produced in southern and southwest China because they've got more temperate climates, particularly this time of the year. They have to drive through Hebei province, and of course that has been locked down now because of the coronavirus. So it means that there are in fact food shortages in the capital city, Beijing, and that is virtually unheard of. So when we think about what's putting upward pressure on commodities, there's a whole host of factors. And it's one of the big points is that it's not being driven by oil prices. It's being driven by shortages and inefficiencies that were compounded as a result of the coronavirus and the lockdowns and the pandemic overall. What we're also seeing is that the Baltic Dry Index was up in a meaningful manner in here yesterday. And it's coming back up towards that 2000 level. But 2000 is literally a fraction of where prices were habitually trading in the period from 2003 through to the peaks in 2008. There is the clear scope that we're going to see a sustained break above the 2000 level. Well, when we think about some of the shipping companies, it's been one of the least loved of any sector anywhere for really quite a prolonged period, but some at least are starting to push up and out of these long-term base formations from very depressed levels overall. As we think about what that means for inflation, where shipping costs are rising, oil prices are rising, agricultural and industrial resources prices are climbing, well, we're not seeing a really big move so far in CPI. I tuned into part of Jeff Gundlach's webcast this afternoon, which is why I'm recording my broadcast a little bit later. And his team anticipates that CPI is going to be north of 2% by June of this year. And the logical conclusion, therefore, is that there won't be much worry at the Fed as long as the bond yield is below the rate of inflation. So the Federal Reserve clearly wants negative real interest rates. And the bond yield got up to 1.2% today and pulled back. We had some auctions and there was ample demand in the region of the yield peak from back in March. So we may see some compression here. But of course, the big question that I think everyone is going to be asking is, will 1% now offer support, whereas it had offered resistance all the way between November and December? With bond yields starting to display a little weakness and some support coming through for bonds in the market, the dollar was a little weaker. This has been a really very modest jump for the dollar. We've definitely seen that some currencies have been absolutely resurgent against the dollar this year. The Israeli shekel in particular has been rallying in a very significant manner, and it is accelerating higher. That is definitely helping to support the stock market overall. And in local currency terms, it is coming back into the region of the peak. But of course, we have to factor in that the shekel has been particularly strong, so it is pushing on to new all-time highs as we look at that, or we look at it from the perspective of an international investor. Of course, Israel has been particularly effective in securing vaccines for what is a reasonably small population. The South Korean market is now also looking a little bit overbought, and we've had a very meaningful move, and it does look, I think, potentially that we're going to see some consolidation coming through in here. The commonality that we have between the semiconductors index and, that is not the right chart, but it does remind me to look at some of the banks, but the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index has rallied in a very similar manner to the kind of move that we've had in Taiwan and South Korea. And of course, they are all heavily weighted by semiconductors producers. So this is as much a play on the demand for semiconductor components. And not least because as we think about why is there such demand? Well, it's obviously because there's a lot more geopolitical competition going on right now with USA telling its diplomats that they don't need to abide by prohibitions on talking to Taiwanese officials any longer. That's obviously creating some stress with China. It's certainly not showing up, though, in their stock market. The Chinese CSI 300 was up in a meaningful manner in here today. That is a resounding, countermanding upward dynamic. One thing that I think is particularly interesting, we've seen in the media a large number of stories where there has been, of talk of companies being delisted from U.S. markets and prohibitions on trading those same instruments. But the U.S. listed Chinese companies index has continued to rally, and it is now right back in the region of its peak from 2017 and 18. Some of the best performers have so far been able to escape any kind of prohibition. So Baidu is certainly leading that index, and it is right back in the region of the peak from back in 2018. And then we have New Oriental Education and Technology Company hasn't really looked back at all. I believe TAL Education is also pretty much in the same boat. That it is right now in the region of the trend mean. It had been one of the primary beneficiaries of the lockdowns. The big question is whether it can continue to do so now that we're coming towards the other end of it. Of course, we're not quite at the end of the pandemic just yet. And in places where this new variant of the virus is rising, then cases are leaping ahead. That's particularly true in Ireland, which so far had been able to avoid the worst of the lockdowns. I was speaking with my sister over the weekend, and her kids are only now just beginning to start online school. They'd been in school all the way through, whereas my eldest daughter, and my youngest daughter too, has been doing homeschooling since March of last year. There is, of course, the potential that with this new version of the vaccine that more people are going to end up getting it. One thing I can certainly attest to is that people within my circle are increasingly catching the virus. I imagine that that is similar to the majority of people. It might be one of the reasons why willingness to take a vaccine has actually been increasing, because as more people within one's personal circle contract the disease or the virus, then the repercussions of infection become a little bit closer to home. And when we think about it in those terms, then that is going to create more demand for vaccines. There will clearly be additional measures put in place to produce as many as possible and get as many people inoculated as possible. Well, that's positive for biotechnology companies generally, not least because these new technologies now are going to have greater senses of efficacy for the majority of people. The reality is, however, that as we look towards the middle of this year, it's quite likely that inflationary pressures will start to rise. Now, when there was another point that that Jeff Gundlach was making, and I thought it was a good one, because he was highlighting this new, or I guess it's hardly a new one, but this additional measure for looking at wage growth, because wage growth has been heavily affected by the number of people dropping out of the workforce and therefore no longer counted. Wage growth has been holding around 3.7% now for most of the last 4 years. Now, if we think about what that means, it's really that wage growth hasn't really changed all that much this year. There are some people that came out of the pandemic in better shape. Others came out worse, but those that are still working have probably been able to negotiate a pay rise. Well, then when we think about the fact that it's at 3.7%, and then if we think about the fact that mortgage rates are at 2.9%, well, it means that mortgages are really cheap. That was the primary point that Gundlach was making, that if wages are growing at above the mortgage rate, well, then you're basically getting your mortgage for free. And that's another example of negative real interest rates. So we're in a situation where the purchasing power of currencies is declining rather rapidly. And the Federal Reserve is willing to do what's necessary to keep negative real interest rates as a market phenomenon for the foreseeable future. So that is positive for gold over the medium term, but gold remains rather soft, and it's back in the region of the $1,800 level, and it has steadied a little in here today from the region of the trend mean. But one thing we can certainly look at this trading environment since August, and there have been a preponderance of downward dynamics, and there haven't been upward dynamics to the same extent within this 5 month period. So that does tell us that the stabs to the downside are softening up the market. It's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some more volatility. And in order to clearly demonstrate that we're back in a demand dominated environment, it's going to have to sustain a move above $1,950. And it's a rather similar environment for gold shares. I still think that gold shares represent clear value. And the potential is that as long as gold holds around the $1,800 level, well, then these companies are making very substantial margins on their business. And that will certainly help to improve their valuation over time. The gold shares themselves aren't spending, and they're focusing on free cash flow generation, which is exactly why shareholders tend to be interested in gold shares rather than ETFs. But we're probably going to have gold doing better in order to clearly demonstrate to investors that there's an urgency to buying gold shares. One thing that is interesting is silver has at least held the $25 area, and that is holding support where resistance was evident in September, October, and through to December. If it can hold that level, well, then it would really be very positive. And also the fact that platinum prices are holding the $1,000 level is also rather encouraging. So platinum may be putting in a first step above the base. Silver may be starting to find support. But the big question then will be whether gold can hold this $1,800 level. We're still in this corrective phase overall because investors don't have the urgency. They don't have the fear of inflation just yet. But the performance of all of the industrial and agricultural commodities suggests that it is likely that inflationary pressures are going to rise from here. And I think that is probably the big takeaway as we think about what's next. When we then think about what's going on in other markets, well, obviously the pandemic champions have done spectacularly well. The Indian market continues to push on to new high ground. Then when we think about banking sectors, well, Indian banks have had this really impressive round trip to their highs, but there has been a really spectacular divergence in terms of the performance of different banks. Yes Bank is just about demonstrating support. Then when we think about some of the big state-owned banks like the State Bank of India, well, then they have rebounded in a much more impressive fashion. And of course, the better performing of the privately owned banks give us, I guess, what might be considered the best of both worlds. As we think about what's going on in terms of the U.S. banking sector, well, the USA's banks are much better capitalized. They certainly benefit from the steepening yield curve. And the yield curve spread got out to 100 basis points in here today and pulled back from that level a little. So we're definitely getting at least some support coming through for the 10-year, because investors don't really believe that the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates anytime soon. But it's not just about raising rates. It's about the question of just how willing will the Treasury and the Fed be in organizing modern monetary theory. Are we going to see a very substantial debt issuance from the US Treasury that's going to be funded by the Federal Reserve buying those bonds this year? If we are, then this bull market can continue. If the Federal Reserve rebels or tries to hike rates or taper its assistance and is very eager to allow yields to rise, well, that is going to have a knock-on for the wider stock market. But so far, at least with the 10-year pausing, that's not an urgent risk. But the continued outperformance of commodities suggests that it is something we need to prepare for at some point in the first half of this year. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.